Welcome to Trapping Radio. This is your host, Clint Locklear. This is a bonus show, I guess. I've got one question I want to answer that came on email, and I think I've talked to this gentleman on the phone, but I'm not sure, but it could be something that may be able to help you, so we're going to go over it. And the other thing is, what in the world has been going on with Trapping Radio? I'm going to try to explain all this in a short way, besides just saying chaos. And then we've got our school, me and Jeff Dunlap, Trapping Mafia School. It's going to be in Michigan. I'm going to explain some of that to you. And then that's going to be, it's a short show. This is more of just the basic premise is what's been going on, because we haven't had shows up and we couldn't get shows up. So before we do, I want to thank our sponsors. We have F&T Fur Harvesters, everything you need for trapping, hunting with hounds, and predator calling. Hilltop Outdoors, our funky trap tags and supplies. Same guy, different company. Full line of trapping supplies, great people to deal with. They're the ones that ships out my product. And then we have Dunlap Lures. Jeff's a good friend of mine, makes high quality lures. You will not be disappointed. And then we have Okie Cable and Trap out of Oklahoma. It's got a full line of trapping supplies and just another good guy to deal with when it comes to getting your supplies. So, what has been going on with Trapping Radio? Well, I've said this before, last time I could get into my site, and we got hacked. And hacked in a way that didn't seem all that malicious at the time, except there was 898 redirects inside the site. So if you don't know what that means, like when you go from clicking on one thing to the next, it sends you to wherever they want to send you. Now, luckily, it wasn't to like pornography or, you know, a PETA site or something like that. So it wasn't like that. But we found out later what was going on, and we've had to do some massive rebuilding to get away from this. So I thought we had that under control. And then we started getting lit up with the server that we pay for Trapping Radio, dedicated server out of Canada. I wanted to get away from America, and Canada apparently was not the best option, but some of the stuff that was inside of the code opened up the security on the rest of the site that we didn't catch. So all of a sudden, because the site's been online for so long, I think Trapping Radio started in 2011, if I'm not mistaken. And, you know, we've made it where bots and stuff like that, it's really hard for them to leave comments. But this opened that up. And all of a sudden, either with the person that hacked the site, or other people that don't like trapping websites, and trust me, there's people out there that try to screw with us all the time, because we got some pretty neat, unique stuff. So if somebody sends out a program against Trapping Radio, it shuts down and sends them pretty much a very ugly fellow shooting two birds and giving them a very short two-word message that ends with you. And the first word ends with K. But once it hits that level, it shuts down to shut their program off to do that. So over the years, we've had people do some really wild stuff trying to shut down Trapping Radio. Not trappers, but, you know, people that think that we're just terrible people. And we built up a lot of this. But what this allowed to happen was all the people and all the programs that were trying to get into it, because it's been online for such a long time and it gets the traffic that it does, all of a sudden we started getting all of these abuse emails from the server company, because it was something like some hours there would be like 100,000 spams getting on the website. Now, you might not be able to see that on your end, but the server is collecting all that data. And it overwhelms the system because we didn't realize what they were doing. So my web guy, David, he calls up and he's trying to work with these people out of Canada, and they're out of Quebec, and they're not very friendly towards Americans, and they were pretty much being little dicks. So we couldn't even get into the dashboard side of the site, which if you don't have a website, you have what you see as the customer, the listener. And then for me to post stuff, I have a dashboard. So it's like a control system that I can go add new post or correct stuff or put in MP3 files, which is what you listen to on the podcast. We couldn't even get into our own server. And the server company was like trying to punish us or something. I don't know if they're anti. I don't know if they're super liberal and some stuff I said they picked up on and got all pissed off about. But it turned into not a very good working relationship. So we couldn't fix the parts that was causing all this spam to overload the server. They weren't being helpful. Now, please keep in mind, trapping radio, because of the MP3 files, it's like probably 100 times bigger than something like Paul Dobbins' forum site because of the audio. Trapper Man is actually pretty small on a database compared to what we do. So we had to find another server, which we did, out of Chicago, that would allow, so you're not going to get slowed down when you're downloading podcasts and listening to podcasts and stuff like that. We found somebody that everything worked out, checked out, did our due diligence to make sure we're good to go. So then David had to go back and download the whole site off of the database in Canada. And then we had to, if I understand what he was saying correctly, retroact some of the newer stuff before the hack. Okay, so we got that done. So I'm like, we should be good to go. We're completely off the old server. We've got all the security issues fixed. I can start uploading. Well, that's when the second wave of chaos hit us. And guys, the only reason I'm telling you this is, for one, if you've been thinking maybe I don't want to do the show anymore or whatever, that's not the case. It's just like every time I would try to do something, I felt like someone was hitting me in the shin with a sledgehammer. So all the stuff that we've done over the years, because it's a WordPress platform that we have, like an example is, on the standard WordPress platform, you can upload MP3 files to 10 megabytes. Well, that didn't do me any good, because if you have an hour show or an hour and 20 minute show, it's going to be somewhere between 100 and 130 megabytes. So it wouldn't let me do that. And that's not something I can fix. David had to go into the code on the webmaster's dashboard of the dashboard that I see and change stuff. And we just kept running into stuff. So hopefully we've got all that straightened out. I've got a bunch of stuff getting ready to happen personally, nothing bad, a bunch of family and things like that coming up. So I'm going to put up this post. I'm going to put up Chip's post and Nick Bauer's post all at one time. And then it'll be about Chip's podcast is going to be for this week, and Nick Bauer's and Jeff Dunlap's is going to be for next week, but they're both going to be this week just because I don't know if I'm going to have good enough service to turn it on to what's going on. And then we'll get to start back. I'm hoping. Because technology to me is very frustrating. I know how to do the very specific things that I know how to do because I've had to do them over and over and over again. When so there's a glitch in the system, I get really lost because I don't understand how the thing works half the time. Like what you do on your phone and what you do on the backside of a website is very different. So we think, fingers crossed, that everything's going to be smooth and everything's going to be working the way that it's supposed to. So that's what's happened. The hack screwed with us way harder than I realized. And we had to completely change servers by database. Then we had to find all the stuff that we put in there over the last 11 years that we've done over time that you just don't think about anymore to get everything to where it's working right again. So I'm praying that we're done with this for a while. So that is what has been happening with Trapping Radio. And like I said, the only way I can describe it on my end is pure chaos and frustration and probably a few cuss words. And I may have thrown one or two things around the office. But hopefully, that's over. So I want to read this question because it's a good question. And this is trapping based. First, I want to thank you for putting all the videos and podcasts. They've been a great help. The first question I have, do you have anything different over the summer to scout for coyotes for the next season? I have an internship working in with a forester this summer and will likely be able to pick up a bunch of new properties when I meet the landowners. I don't want to be wasting time in the fall and wanted to get an idea of where more coyotes are outside of my immediate range. I'm located near, which I'm not going to say. I just don't think we have a whole lot of coyotes near me. There is not a ton of sign, limited number of trail cam pictures of coyotes, so I'll be looking for new areas to increase my numbers. I typically catch 2 to 3 a season, but was able to catch 5 this last season. And I know where you're trapping at, man. That's not an easy place to trap. Most of those are in cable restraints, so I feel that I've been struggling to connect with footholds. Wish I could use cable restraints for the full trapping season, which you can't do in this state. And then I wouldn't worry about footholds as much and focus on the cable restraints. Thanks for any help you can give me, DY. Okay, this is not going to be the answer that you want, but it is the answer the way that it is. It's just reality. I wish I could tell you that you can go scout in the summer and that's going to have a correlation somehow to what you're going to find in the fall. Well, I'll take that back. There's a little bit, but there's not very much. Here's the reason. When you're in the summer, and I'm going to say summer, June, July, coyotes have pups, they have dens, and they have very small territories. During this time, it's about the only time in the coyote's life of the year that they're highly protective. Kind of think of it of if you've got kids at your house and all of a sudden you got, you know, strangers showing up and you don't know what their intentions are and they may look a little shady and they may act a little shady, you're going to be very protective of your kids. And that's exactly the way coyotes are. And the other thing about summer is coyotes only move as far as they need to get enough food and water to survive. That's it. That's very different starting usually about September. You go through dispersal. And then you go through a bunch of coyotes that are just trying to figure out these new territories. So they're running around everywhere. And then you go into breeding season. They start tightening up their territories a little bit, but there's a whole bunch of cross contamination with other coyote groups because they're trying to find mates and everything else. And, you know, they can smell the coyotes are in heat and they're challenging other coyotes and all this stuff's going on. But in the summer, you don't have a whole lot of coyotes to do very much traveling. Now, it could happen if you had like a big forest fire or you had, a big timber company in and start whacking out thousands of acres of trees or something like that that would force the coyotes to take the pups and try to find a new den area, which is very dangerous for the pups because the other alpha male and alpha female of the other groups don't want the other kids in their territory because they're worried about their kids. And if another male comes across that, there's going to be a big fight and the pups are usually the loser. So when you find sign in the summer, you're just inside of the territory of where the coyotes live, which is very small during that time. So, and it depends. Like, I know where you're at, the DY. I'm not going to say the state. You have quite a bit of food in the summer. Mice, voles, squirrels, ducks, birds, deer, different things like that that a coyote can feed on. So they're not gonna, you know, like if their territory in the winter is say 3-4 square miles, they only may live within a half a mile of the den in the summer. So you're not gonna find sign until you're pretty close to actually the den area, which is very different if you go somewhere out west where it's a lot of desert. I'm not talking about Texas, but I'm talking like Montana, probably Wyoming, Utah, Nevada, places like that, where there's not as much food source that's concentrated like it is in the east. Those coyotes will have a bigger area, but they're still only going to go as far as they need to meet their needs, and they're not going to expend any more energy. It's hot and they have a fur coat on and they have to stay as close as they can to the den to protect the pups. Most of the time, what you're going to see on the the furthest of their smaller range is going to be the dominant male. He's going to be checking for intruders and he's going to be bringing in food. The female will hunt, but she'll even be tighter to the den than the male will. So when you're out in the summer, you may go across lots of areas where you find very little sign in the summer that'll be loaded with sign in the fall and in the winter. So it can give you the illusion that there's no coyotes there. No, there's no coyotes there during the time of the year that you're doing your scouting because of the lifestyle of the coyote is different in the summer than it is in the fall and the winter and the spring. When most people go coyote trapping, you're talking at your latitude where you wrote this letter, you're going to start getting some serious weather probably late November, December, on an average year. You're going to have snow before then and stuff like that, but I'm talking serious weather where it's hard for stuff like that to get around. Up to that point, you've got coyotes running everywhere from sometimes 50 miles away. Because you got to think, when mom and dad kicks out the pups, they take off, and studies show this. So you've got a bunch of juvenile coyotes that don't know where they're going, don't know where they're at, they don't know where the food's at, And they're being teenagers, and they're not afraid of very much. And they're running around like a bunch of teenagers if you just turn them loose somewhere. And there's no restrictions. They don't have to go back at home. That's when a lot of them pack up and stuff like that, just because it's strength in numbers. And they cover a tremendous amount of ground. But not in the summer. Scouting in the summer, if you find coyote sign, you're pretty much guaranteed you're in a historical area that coyotes are going to be. But you can be 500 yards out from that and not find any sign. But in the fall, there's going to be lots of sign with lots of coyotes. If you follow what the guys that catch a lot of coyotes do, most of them will start keeping coyotes and trapping coyotes as soon as they're probably about 80% prime. The further north you get, the earlier that is. The further south you get, the later in the year that is. And the reason that most big number trappers do this is because the closer you get to fall, if you're out west, high elevations, late September, if you're where you're at, October, I don't know when your season opens, then you've got November, and then you got to start dealing with a lot of pretty nasty weather from then on. And a lot of people will pull their traps because it's really hard to trap in really bad winter weather up north. But that's when the best time is to catch the maximum amount of coyotes, is where you're at, October through the end of November. That's when you really catch the bulk of the coyotes. Now, we can do that here in Tennessee, but they're nowhere near prime. Now, I know in Tennessee, the difference of trapping the valleys or a 1,500 foot, small mountain range like the Cumberland Plateau or something, you'll get about 8 out of 10 coyotes that are skinnable the last week of October. And it gets better from there. Well, up north, end of October, most coyotes are going to be pretty dang primed. They're not going to be perfectly primed, but they're good enough to skin. And they're going to have some market value on a year that coyotes are valuable. Years that they're not as valuable, I would leave it alone and wait till they're a little more prime. But the reason I'm bringing this question up, if you're going out to scout in the summer, you can build some confidence as long as you understand when you do find sign, there's probably going to be coyotes there. There's a reason those coyotes are living there. But there's also a lot of places you're not going to find sign that you could probably catch 12 coyotes in November, and there's no sign in July. If you're going to start scouting before season, about the earliest I would really put a lot of effort in that is going to be in September. Because you've already gotten some coyotes that are out moving, they're out of the den, they're pretty much going to be on their own. And you will be able to get a more realistic view of areas that have coyotes. Because in a place like where you're at, I know the farms are not that big. You know, most places that are good-sized farms where you're at are realistically probably 300-400 acres. And in that area, that seems like a big farm. And there's going to be a lot of 100 acres and 80 acres and stuff like that. But the difference between two 400-acre farms sitting next to each other, one may not have any sign because there's enough food on the other 400-acre farm, and that's going to give you a false sense of there's no coyotes. Now, you're saying you're using cable restraints. Look, whatever works to catch coyotes is the right answer. Snares, traps, guns, claymores, A-10 Warthog airplanes, I don't care what it is. If it's working, it's the right answer. But I think you owe it to yourself to not give up on traps, because there's going to be certain areas where snaring is not the best tool to use for that particular area. You have to force a lot of stuff. You have to try to do a whole lot more blocking than's probably advantageous for coyotes. And if you can use the cable restraints or snares, check your state laws, and you get where you can catch them in coyotes, now you're burning on all eight cylinders. You never want to be, as a trapper, a one-trick pony, because you're going to run into situations where the one trick doesn't work. So if you're running cable restraints like you said you are, and that's where you're catching most of your coyotes, I would still do what you're doing, and I would probably expand that with the new land. But I would fill in with the traps where it's not the best tool to use, and build some experience, build some knowledge, build some muscle memory, and start building the database that's your brain, so you figure out what works and doesn't work. Now, I've gave instruction not too far from where you're at, actually a couple of times. You do not have a serious population of coyotes. Now, over like the county, there is a lot of coyotes, but it's nowhere close to here in Tennessee. It's nothing like going to Arkansas or Texas or Mississippi, Kansas, Nebraska, Missouri. It's nothing like that. And the thing that you're going to have to figure out where you're at is how to be patient. The coyote density that I could tell when I was there and talking with other trappers that do pretty well, say after over a 2-week period, you may only have 1 to 2 chances at the coyotes that actually come through there on a regular basis. That's a lot of days looking at empty traps. But that's where you live. That would be like me in eastern Tennessee deciding I want to be a red fox trapper. We do have red fox. But if I'm going to run fox lines, I'm going to have a lot of days without ever seeing a fox. Lots. Sure, I'll catch possums and coons and skunks and an occasional coyote and an occasional bobcat. But if I'm concentrating on the fox, there's going to be a lot of empty traps. I will find pockets of fox. But the overall view of my trap line for fox in eastern Tennessee is going to be quite low. I could trap all season and realistically 30, 40 fox all season. Maybe 60. Well, our season starts in November and doesn't end till middle of February. You can figure out, you know, there's a whole lot of days and a whole lot of traps that's not going to have fox in it. So if you're in an area like you, or if you're like, say, in the Ozarks of Arkansas or southern Missouri, you're just not going to have the population of coyotes that you will if you're in Missouri and you drop down in the Delta of Arkansas. It's a whole different world as far as number goes. Because when I used to do control work in southern Missouri, in the mountains, with big timber, very poor ground, not a lot of prey species, if I was there for 2 weeks, I would at the most have one or two chances to catch coyotes. That means there may be, you know, on those days, you may catch three or four or five. And then it's dead again. This is the reason I would not do predator work up around Branson ever again. I can't justify my price for those landowners for their population because of the travel ways and the population of coyotes. I can go 50 miles south of there and look like a hero. It makes a big difference where you're at. So just keep that in mind. And don't get disheartened if you're looking at the new property and you don't find a lot of sign. When you need, like I said, September is about the time you would start seeing what's actually going to happen during trapping season. It's starting to cool off at night. Stuff's starting to move. The smaller coyotes are out trying to figure out and, you know, build their own path in life. And that way you can get a little bit better idea of what's going on. Now, I want to talk about our trapping school. This has been, and what I'm getting ready to say is not a brag. As far as I can tell, in the modern times of trapping, I was the first private person to hold a trapping school. Now, I'm not saying that somewhere out in, I don't know, Nebraska, Utah, Minnesota, somewhere, someone didn't have a school. I've never heard of it. But when I first started doing schools for trappers, this was probably 15 years ago. The only school at that time was the Trapping College, which I went to. And then when I decided to do my own school, it was a very weird concept in the trapping industry. Now it's common. Now there's a lot of trapping schools out there. I don't know the value they bring. I haven't been to one. But I know when I first started doing this, from what I was doing then to what I'm doing now is drastically different. It's an evolution. And it started where we got the first camp in Ohio. I had a bunch of instructors. It was like a blown up version of the Trapping College with a mixture of demos from the NTA or, you know, state or something like that. Because the place that we were looking at and used only had like 100 acres. So you had to kind of like force situations to talk about locations. Because let's face it, on 100 acres and a lot of it's open field, a lot of it's with the, you know, the housing and the place where you eat and the classrooms and stuff like that, there's not a whole lot of place there that you can actually, you know, go out and try to mimic the closest to a trap line that you can. And from the very first school to what we're doing now, which I think is getting closer, and I'm not going to say the word perfection, but closer to the best results that we can get is mimicking an actual trap line the way that it would be ran with locations that there's actually going to be traps set at to catch animals. I've heard a lot of different ways that people do schools, and God bless them. Whatever they think is best is what they should do, and if the students are happy, I'm glad for them. But this evolution has now taken us to a different level for me and Jeff at the school. See, the last 2 years or 3 years, we've been doing it in Missouri. It's 2 or 3 years. And the reason we picked Missouri is the uniqueness of the exact area that we were at. We had access to about 1,500 acres. We had deep woods. We had open woods. We had grown-up fields. We had cut fields. We had roads and trails going through the woods. We had thickets. We had ponds. I mean, it was really diverse in Missouri. But there's some stuff that's going on with the camp itself that it's just not going to work. So lo and behold, here sits me and Jeff, and we're like, well, a lot of the comments we've been getting from guys is, it's too far west. Now, in Missouri, the land we were trapping on was not too far west, because you could take a picture there and I would think I was in Tennessee, or I would think I was in parts of Michigan, or I could have been in Minnesota or Alabama, because it was really diverse. And it was a way for us that we could use four-wheelers and put picnic tables on trailers and have guys hold on for dear life as we went from one place to the next. But because of the way that that particular land was, we could go to place after place after place that was very diverse and talk about a lot of things trapping, which was really cool. Well, that's not going to work out because some weird stuff going on at the camp. So me and Jeff starts thinking. And so since so many of the comments were back further east, because let's face it, most trappers are from probably Ohio east, realistically. I mean, there's a bunch in Minnesota and stuff like that. But, and we can tell when we do conventions. Me and Jeff have been doing conventions for a long time. You stick a show in Illinois, it's half or a third of the people in Ohio. Stick a show in Indiana, it's hardly ever as good as it is in Pennsylvania or New York. So we wanted to move further east. So my goal, my task, was to find somewhere in Ohio. And I finally found a place in Ohio that had 700 acres, lots of trails, diversity of ground, this, that, and the other. But there was a deal breaker. It wouldn't have mattered to me personally, but I know this was going to be a problem. Zero tolerance on alcohol. Now, in the evening, you don't have to drink to have a good time. But in the evening, we normally sit around a fire pit and, you know, tell tall tales and talk about what we learned and experiences other guys had and how they dealt with it. From a school point of view, from an education point of view, what happened in the evening sometimes was just as valuable as me and Jeff trying to explain how we set traps for different animals. Because it's a different way of learning. And most guys, when they come to a school like this, it's kind of a quasi half education, half vacation, half getaway, take a break. And when guys show up to the school, there are coolers full of beer. Jack Daniels and vodka and everything like that. You don't have to drink to come to our school, but for some reason, when trappers go to do something like this in the evening, they want to drink. So having a zero tolerance of alcohol would have either been, we'd have been kicked out of the camp, or we would never be able to come back, or it would be like the Gestapo trying to catch somebody with a beer in their room. Someone left a beer can in a trash can. I don't know what would have happened, but it wouldn't have been good. So that kind of screwed up. Ohio is a lot of private land and not a whole lot of open ground that you can drive on WMAs and stuff like that. So I asked Jeff, I'm like, dude, what about Michigan? So we started down this road of Michigan. And at first we were thinking Southern Michigan. And then when it all said and done, once we like kept going back and forth and talking about, okay, what is the optimal way to do this? What is the best way to give the best experience for the school? It needs to be as realistic as it can be if you're going out on a trap line. And you can learn something in a quote demo style educational system, but you're missing a ton of real world when you do that. Because a lot of times you're having to explain where you would put a trap. And it's kind of like you have to use your imagination. But if you're going to places you're actually going to set traps, that's a whole different ballgame. So Jeff starts looking around Michigan. And he's looking at camps. Now, our school only has 12 students at a time, which is pretty small for a lot of the guys that try to run as many people as they can through their schools. The reason we use a smaller amount of students is we want to give the best experience and the best attention we can individually to each person. And I don't think after 12, I think a lot of people get left behind. Because you can't do as much hands-on and personal stuff with a group of 30 or 40. Then it kind of went to Jeff. You know, when I've been up there with you, brother, there's like federal ground and state ground everywhere with good roads and good soil to work with. So we started... I'm still looking at Ohio, Jeff's looking at Michigan. And before it was said and done, we found, when I say a lodge, I'm talking, if you're going to build this thing, you better bring somewhere to the range of probably $1.5 to $2 million. It's got 11 beds. Places for sleep, because guys don't want to sleep in the bed with another guy. I'm talking individual beds. It's got pool room, lakes, fire pits. It is something to behold. And it's right where Jeff traps anyway. Now, saying that, Jeff's probably going to take some DNA samples of the students. He's probably going to take your phones and disassemble any GPS that you can, mark locations. I don't know what Jeff's going to do. He may just threaten to cut your nuts off if he sees you on his trap line.
Yeah.
But this is the first time we're going to be able to get so close to what an actual trap line is that I think it's the next step in the evolution of trapping school. So what's going to happen is probably me, Jeff, and Sarah will be in one truck, the lead truck, and then two or three other guys will take their trucks, load up, you know, guys in the front seat and back seat, because it seems like everybody's now got four-door trucks. Throw your crap in the back, and we're going on a real trap line. On a real trap line that Jeff actually runs. Now, knowing Jeff, he's not going to take it in an order that's going to be easy to track. But it's the places that he goes out and him and Sarah slam beaver, slam coyotes, bobcats, fox, coon, everything on a real trap line. So instead of having, you know, having to mock stuff up, this is the real thing. You're gonna learn to see how we see. You're gonna learn how to put the traps in the way that we trap, which is similar but not similar, which you'll see when you come to the school. But you're gonna get both perspectives. And you're gonna have those perspectives in such a way that if you pay attention and you put in the effort, you should be better than me or Jeff when you leave the school, because you're gonna know what both of us do. We're gonna give you that opportunity. We're taking you on a real trap line to be better than we are. Because I do my thing and Jeff does his thing. But if you do your part as a student during the day when we're out doing this, you should be able to out compete me and Jeff individually, because you're gonna be able to mix and match of what we're both telling and showing you how to do. So we're actually going to go to real places that real traps are set for real animals. The downside for this, just being completely transparent, is there's going to be a little more drive time between sets because it's a real trap line. But trust me, when you're in the truck with a bunch of other trappers and y'all get to go over everything that we're doing, and you're not only going to get to learn from me and Jeff, you're going to be learning from 11 other guys that actually trap at the same time. If you can't walk away from what we're getting ready to do at such a higher degree of proficiency of what you do right now, you weren't paying attention and you weren't caring. We can't force it on you. That's up to you. All we can do is lay out the banquet in front of you. You can choose to eat or not eat. Because you can talk to anybody that's been to the school so far. We go into great detail over and over and over again, showing different situations with different sets and why we set this way here and not that way there. And the coolest thing that happened after this last school is because there's text threads that the schools have come up with. From a teacher's point of view, an instructor's point of view, when day after day after day, you're seeing pictures and hearing guys talk about, I did it this way from the school, and you're looking at animals on the text. So not only do you get the school, we'll set up another text group for each individual school, and you can stay in touch with everybody. And if you don't continue learning from that, that's on you. The biggest thing that I noticed this year was how many guys were slamming coyotes in blind sets. the most non-sexiest set that you can make in modern day drafting. Still the most deadliest set in the right situations that you can do, but it's just not really the information that people want to read or watch a demo about. But see, these guys this year, somehow we beat it into them on the blind set that they went out and actually started doing it, and lo and behold, fur started stacking up. It was super cool to see. Because let's face it, people talk about dirt holes and flat sets and blind sets. And if someone's a dirt hole guy, he'll kind of like half-ass put in some flat sets to, quote, meet the criteria of showing somebody. And he never really puts in blind sets, but he'll kind of show it to meet the criteria. Well, when it comes to me and Jeff, we're just as serious about flat sets as we are dirt holes. And we're both probably doubly serious about blind sets. And that is a skill set that we're going to teach. It's not all blind sets by any stretch of the imagination. But you're going to hear certain things like, why would you go put in a dirt hole when you don't have to? Why you put in a flat set when you don't have to? Why in the world would you do anything but a blind set? The coyote is going to catch me here, so catch him there, and don't try to screw it up by making it complicated. Some of the stuff that we teach seems complicated. It's not once you get the hang of it. Trapping can be actually pretty simple once you understand the animal. We've talked about this hundreds of times. So the school this year is going to be, let me make sure, I probably can't even pronounce his name, because everything in Michigan has got, sounds like an Indian said it. Okay, I can read this one. Black River, Michigan. That's where the school is going to be. It's 2 days of schooling. So what's going to happen, guys, is you're going to come in after 4 o'clock the day that your school starts, the day before your school starts. That way you get settled in, you get to meet everybody, you get a good supper. We hang out, we talk, we do all that. Next morning, it's all business. Next morning, it's all business. I promise you, after being with Jeff and me for 2 days, your brain is going to have a fog. You're going to be so overloaded with information. Probably after 10 o'clock on the second day, you're not really absorbing as much because we just force-fed with a fire hose so much crap into your brain that your brain is going to just back away. Very few people, I can tell you from experience, the way that I teach and Jeff teaches, after a day and a half, we still do stuff. We still show you stuff, but you can't absorb anymore. Because it's not like we put in the same set over and over and over again. That's not the way we trap. So the Trapping Mafia School, you will show up at the first class after 4 o'clock on the 29th of September. And then the next 2 days is the school. You'll get up the next morning, eat a breakfast if you want to, and take off. The next students will come in after 12. Then they'll have 2 days of class. And then they'll take off after breakfast after their 2 days of class. So we're only running 2 classes with a total of 12 students. Black River, Michigan. This is in the heart of where Jeff traps. So it's $1,200. If you go talk to any student that we've had at our school, they'll pretty much tell you by 10 o'clock or 12 o'clock at the latest on the first day, you've already earned.